LibroFM lets you purchase audiobooks directly from your favorite local bookstore. Choose from more than 150,000 audiobooks, including New York Times bestsellers and recommendations from booksellers around the country. With LibroFM, you'll get the same audiobooks at the same price as the largest audiobook company out there. You know what one we're talking about, but you'll be part of a much different story, one that supports community.
If you're new to audiobooks, they're the perfect way to get more books into your busy life. Listen while doing chores, walking the dog, or just relaxing at home. All you need is a smartphone and the free LibroFM app.
If you already love audiobooks and don't know what to listen to next, check out recommendations and curated lists from the people who know audiobooks best, local booksellers.
Listeners of the Bookstore Podcast can get a 2-month audiobook membership for the price of 1 month.
Go to Libro.fm, that's LIBRO.FM, and enter bookstore at checkout. With each listen, take pride in knowing that you're supporting local bookstores.
Welcome to the bookstore.
It's like a book club, but we actually read the book.
I'm Becca.
And I am Corinne, and today is technically election day, probably, if we get this out on time. So, good luck, everyone. and also take care of yourselves and each other. How about that?
Yes.
I'm nervous. Everything's nerves. Was there any other thing I wanted to talk about? I feel like there was, and then I forgot because we've been recording for an hour now already.
I want to say giveaway.
Yeah, I did that already. Lisa won. One of the many Lisas who follows the podcast, won. but we will be doing another one. I just have to find an optimal time to post it because I feel like not many people saw the last one. So keep your eyes peeled on our Instagram for another giveaway. And then that one will be US only. And then after that, we will be doing an international giveaway. So if you're an international listener, keep your eyes open for that as well. Oh, I know what I was going to say. We are moving up our gift guide this year. So our next mini episode is going to be our gift guide. This year is really important to help local independent bookstores with book ordering, like in order to not put too much pressure on them all at once, to get your orders for the holidays early. So we're pushing that up. And also just keep that in mind right now. Start your book gifting sooner this year because things are more difficult and we want to make that as smooth as possible for our friends who work in bookstores. Let's get on to our discussion.
So we read Their Eyes Were Watching God by Zora Neale Hurston, which was first published in 1937. This is the first time I've ever read this, but this is not the first time for you, right?
Right. Yes. I read this my senior year of high school. You know what? I'm going to give Mrs. Thompson mad props. This was a great book to choose for a high school class, I think, in terms of like the books you normally have to read in high school.
Yeah. So Hurston was an author and an anthropologist focused on research of the American South and Hoodoo cultures. Much of this was conducted in Florida and the Caribbean. Hurston, she wrote along the same time frame as the Harlem Renaissance, but she was essentially forgotten by the time of her death in 1960. Like, her books were no longer in print, and she wasn't really, I think she was maybe publishing a little bit, but not very much at all. She was rediscovered by Alice Walker, who went in search of Hurston's unmarked grave in Florida, and she wrote about it in an essay titled In Search of Zora Neale Hurston. Since that article was published in 1975, Hurston's work began gaining recognition, and I don't really have exactly proof of this, but I would bet that since the 70s or the late 70s,
Their Eyes Were Watching God,
three marriages, several moves, and...
So, clearly, spoilers, but this is, as you mentioned, a book that's almost 100 years old, so...
Yeah. For her as a way of helping Janie. Janie is deeply unhappy with her marriage to Logan, her first husband, and eventually runs off with this guy she meets named Jody or Joe Starks. So their relationship lasts until Joe's death. He is quite a bit older than her. After Joe dies, Janie still maintains the store that they opened In
Eatonville, Florida, it's outside of Orlando. Here, let's put it the way that the Wikipedia page for Eatonville says. One of the first self-governing all-black municipalities in the United States.
So it is a real location, a real town.
Yes.
After Joe dies, she still is maintaining the store that they opened in the town of Eatonville, and she refuses to remarry because she does have quite a bit of money. And she's a pretty well sought after as a widow, but she refuses to remarry until a man named Tea Cake comes to town. Tea Cake is younger than she is, I believe 12 years younger. They start hanging out, playing chess. It's very, very cute. But it is with Tea Cake that Janie is finally able to feel and understand what love is. They have a couple good years together. They do get married and move away. Until a hurricane forces them to move. And during their escape, Tea Cake is bitten by a rabid dog. They don't realize that until weeks later when Janie gets a doctor to see Tea Cake. They know he's bitten by a dog, but they don't know that the dog had rabies. So Tea Cake, since he now has rabies, obviously he has a mental breakdown and tries to shoot Janie. And that forces Janie to defend herself and shoot him. She goes on trial, but is acquitted. And then she returns to the town of Eatonville, where she had lived with Joe, and is basically telling the story of her life to Phoebe, who is a friend of hers from that town.
I love this book. I think this might be the first book we have reread, or I have reread for the podcast, maybe. I don't know anymore. But so I wasn't quite sure what to expect because I think in high school, I obviously like had a very different experience with it. I think I was younger. I don't remember disliking it. But at the same time, I think like now I can just sort of relate to the character better because everybody in it is adults, basically. Most of it takes place when Janie's, you know, I guess, quote unquote, middle age. She's in her 40s. And so I feel a little bit closer to that, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. I really loved this. What about you?
Yeah, I did too. And while I was reading it, I was thinking about, you know, why I never picked it up before. And I think there's a, like I have, and probably a lot of people have, this idea of like older literature in that it's like kind of old and stodgy. Because from what I remember reading in high school, like The Scarlet Letter, I can't read that. That's not interesting to me.
Absolutely not. I refuse.
And then, but now with some of the stuff that we're reading, like with this and with Nella Larson's passing, which I also was just like blown away by how good it is. It just makes me think that like I was just reading the wrong books.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is like the kind of the themes that these old white men authors wrote about back in 1860 are just not themes that resonate with me or really any kind of modern life at all. And I'm not really saying that like the reason Their Eyes Were Watching God is good is because I personally can relate to it. That's not what I mean.
Yeah.
But I just think that like a lot of women writers are dealing with more universal themes.
Yeah.
Of like what is it to love? Like what does that mean?
And also like being a woman in a world where men make all of the decisions for you too, or where your only option for moving up in life is marrying above your station or whatever. I think, you know, while that's maybe not a concern that I necessarily have anymore, it is kind of fascinating to think about how most of the books that I read back then didn't carry those themes. And so getting a woman's perspective is really kind of, I guess not shocking, but it's completely different from what I remember mostly having to read about back then. Even the books that had female characters, it was from a male's perspective most of the time. So do they know? But yeah, so the format is, it's like you said, Janie is telling the story to her friend Phoebe as she comes back to Eatonville, which is where she had lived with her husband Joe for, I think it was like almost 20 years that they were together until he passed away. And then she took off with Tea Cake and the between parts. So she comes back into town, then she tells the story to Phoebe, and then it wraps up having her having explained like the her whole life, basically, to Phoebe. How did you like the format?
I do think it's like a bit corny to use that sort of thing. Like, I'm going to tell you this story. I mean, but eventually, like, once you get into it, it doesn't, like, it just reads like a regular narrative. So,
yeah, it's not her saying. And then I said to Phoebe,
Right, right. Which is what I was afraid. It kind of like started like that at first. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I didn't mind it at all. And I do think that, like, in the end, because it comes full circle and she, you know, she returns to the town and that's why she's talking to Phoebe, it did have a really like satisfactory ending in that way.
Yeah. So I was thinking about this because I know that Hurston was an anthropologist and stuff. I think it did kind of have this, the added benefit of making you realize, you know, that this is also in a way to like satisfy the rest of the town who are all gossiping about her when she comes back. Like the first couple chapters are about women who have seen her return and they, you know, are gossipy in general, wondering where she's been, why she came back in overalls instead of the pretty dresses she ran off in, and the, you know, all of the things that they want to say behind her back and treating her badly because she didn't immediately come and tell them where she's been. I think it really had that kind of ability to like round out this sort of small town living in the way that people like really tend to speak, especially in places where like most of the entertainment is just talking about your neighbors to one another. Mm-hmm. And I really liked that. I also like the dialogue is all kind of written, I wouldn't say phonetically, but it is to communicate like the dialect that they're speaking in, which can take a little bit of time to get used to. But I really appreciated that. And I can see how like being an anthropologist who goes and records what people are talking about and saying and the way that they speak to really kind of like adds a lot to the characters of the story. And I liked that. It really made me think about like the way that people actually do communicate and like center their lives around the stories that they tell each other and the stories that they tell each other about each other too.
Yeah. So I know Hurston had trouble originally like publishing her nonfiction book, Barracoon, the story of the last black cargo, which was ended up being published in 2018 because she decided to write it. It was about the life of a man, and she wrote it all in his dialect. And so I think publishers were like, well, nobody's going to read this because it's too difficult. And I think with just anything, like with reading the dialogue, it just takes a minute to get used to. And then you recognize what the words are. Mm-hmm. And then you can get into the flow of it, like to me. But yeah, I did like that. So we can just kind of go through some of the plot points. So Janie starts out as being, I think she's around 16 years old, and she has a moment where she's under this pear tree and she just feels, I don't know, everything.
Yes.
She just is so in tune to like what the pear tree looks like, what the sun looks like coming through the leaves and all that kind of stuff, and realizes like that's the feeling that she wants in her life. And then she sort of is brought back down to earth because her grandma, who she lives with, is basically like, okay, well, you're going to get married off to this guy.
It's kind of like such a classic storyline in a way, like this idea of like young people being romantic and wanting to marry for love. I mean, like that's in Shakespeare, you know, that's like Midsummer Night's Dream and whatever. And older people having more practical ideas of what that would look like. And Janie's grandmother was a slave at the time that she had Janie's mother. And so, I mean, I think like their lives are just very, very different. I think what she gave birth to Janie's mother, and then like days later, slavery was technically abolished. And so she was able to get away. And so I think it's such a fascinating kind of look at a different reality of those sorts of generations. You know, her grandmother is thinking very, very practically, I want my daughter to, or my granddaughter to be safe. And Janie really wants love and romance. And I don't know, it's such a kind of like heartbreaking tension between those two, because her grandmother realizes like the dangers that exist for them. I think I felt that much more this time around than when I was younger.
And it's kind of, you know, the two different people, it's not like they're going to be able to understand, because due to Janie's grandmother's life, like, she can't really understand what more do you want other than this guy who's got land, he's got a house, and he'll take care of you. Like, what else could you possibly want in life?
Yeah. And you won't have to work for white people, even though the people that her grandmother worked for were kind to them, you know, or at least that's the way that the story is told. Like, there is no kind of like freedom quite like that, like being able to do your own work for yourself and have your own property.
And so it's just like, it is really sad, because at one point Janie comes to her grandmother and she's like, I don't love him. I still don't love him. I thought this was going to happen. This is after they got married. Mm-hmm. And her grandmother, before Janie like confesses that, she's like, says something like, there's like an issue with the marriage. And the grandmother immediately leaps to, oh, he's like beating her.
Yeah.
Because that's also just, that's the only thing she can really understand of what would be the issue with this.
And that comes up a lot in the book too, which is just kind of like a crazy, I think now, like reading a story about almost 100 years ago, you know, where like hitting your wife is not just like common, but like also normal and like something that it seems like people think you should be doing, which is kind of a crazy thing to read about.
Well, since we brought up like domestic violence, so I also thought, like, the way Hurston writes about it, it also is something that makes me feel like, not that this book could be written now, but it just has such an insight into why men beat their wives or their partners that it was kind of like surprising to me, you know, because Tea Cake, who is like the perfect man, he hits Janie because he gets jealous. The book even states like, oh, he's not hitting her because she did anything wrong.
Yeah.
He's hitting her because he wants to be reminded that he can treat her like this, that she belongs to him.
And also because he wanted everybody else to know that she was his property, which was very eye-opening, shocking. I mean, there is no excuse for it ever. I'm also supposed to not think about things historically as being right or wrong, but I don't know.
Yeah, that's also something that it just feels like, oh, that's exactly what we would refer to today as like toxic masculinity. Like, Tea Cake cares more about what other people think of his relationship than what like Janie thinks of him in that way. Then Janie meets Joe, or Jody Starks, and just like leaves.
Yeah. In some ways, I felt kind of bad, because I think her first husband, Logan, while he was a lot older than her, and there's also yikes energy there with like, don't marry a 16-year-old to like a 50-year-old man. Please stop. Can we not do that? It was interesting because like he did really kind of seem to be wanting to make a pretty good life for her in some ways. But also he was older. So like, I think he just didn't have the energy to do too much, you know? And so I felt funny about it this time around, because I was like, girl, like, you could be, you know, pretty comfortable here. But because she keeps kind of like picking fights about him not doing things for her the right way, like, I felt like there was more nuance. There was more like not making her perfect and like a victim, because she was also picking some of those fights, which I thought was really interesting, because I think, you know, other books and other stories, it might just be like, oh, he doesn't care about her. But in this one, it's like there's the tension there of like her also picking at those things. I thought that was interesting. So yeah, I didn't blame her when she just like up and left with Joe, but it was interesting, because it wasn't quite as simple as just like she has a terrible life and it's abusive. There was like that idealism that forced her forward almost more than anything else.
Well, and I think that's also something that's interesting about this, is none of the guys were perfect and none of them were all that bad either.
Right.
Like, Logan's biggest flaw is just the fact that Janie doesn't love him.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, I mean, I thought that was really interesting. Like, I didn't really necessarily want her to stay with Logan, but it also was weird that she would just leave him and, like, how she treated him as well. Yeah, especially since when it happens, you know, you think that Joe is just going to, like, run off and leave her.
Yeah, I've got a long quote here. First of all, the writing in this book, when she starts writing about, like, the natural world, which is, I mean, they're in Florida before, like, Florida is really even built up at all. So, like, it is all very much, like, the natural world. It's just absolutely gorgeous. So this is a part where I think Janie kind of comes to realize that she does not want to be with Logan anymore. So it's a whole paragraph because I can't cut out any of it because it's all too damn good. Here we go. So Janie waited a bloom time and a green time and an orange time. But when the pollen again gilded the sun and sifted down on the world, she began to stand around the gate and expect things. What things? She didn't know exactly. Her breath was gusty and short. She knew things that nobody had ever told her. For instance, the words of the trees and the wind. She often spoke to falling seeds and said, "I hope you fall on soft ground," because she had heard seeds saying that to each other as they passed. She knew the world was a stallion rolling in the blue pasture of ether. She knew that God tore down the old world every morning and built a new one by sunup. It was wonderful to see it take form with the sun and emerge from the gray dust of its making. The familiar people and things had failed her, so she hung over the gate and looked up the road towards way off. She knew now that marriage did not make love. Janie's first dream was dead, so she became a woman. Like, excuse me.
Yeah. I believe I also highlighted that.
Sorry. I think, like, there's parts of that could like verge on purple prose, but because it's in service of creating a character who has so romanticized her life and her expectations of life that it's all warranted. So as beautiful as it is, and maybe like as nonsense as the blue pasture of ether or whatever happens to be, it builds her and it makes you understand the expectations that she has. And it's just, oh, it's very good.
It's also very funny. I was just looking through some of the things I have highlighted. So to skip ahead a little bit.
Uh-huh.
So Joe and Janie go to Eatonville, and Joe is like kind of like a big man, so he's really getting the town into shape. He opens a store, makes people build roads, and at the store, so Janie like minds the store, and then everybody in town, not everybody, but a lot of people in town will gather on the porch and like talk about stuff. And one of their favorite subjects is this guy's mule.
Yeah.
And it is so funny because this guy like doesn't feed his mule, and so everybody's like roasting him constantly about this mule as being so skinny. And then eventually, like, Joe actually buys the mule because Janie expresses interest in it, which I thought was actually very, very sweet. So then the mule becomes like the town mule, and they're all like feeding it and stuff.
It's like little Sebastian from Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
Except a mule, and it's the 1930s.
And so I just want to read a paragraph too, because it just cracks me up. Okay, so this is, so nearly everybody took the habit of fetching along a handful of fodder to throw on the pile. He almost got fat and they took great pride in him. New lies sprung up about his free mule doings. How he pushed open Lindsay's kitchen door and slept in the place one night and fought until they made coffee for his breakfast.
Yeah.
How he stuck his head in the Pearson's window while the family was at the table, and Mrs. Pearson mistook him for Reverend Pearson and handed him a plate. He ran Mrs. Tully off of the croquet ground for having such an ugly shape. He ran and caught up with Becky Anderson on the way to Maitland so as to keep his head out of the sun under her umbrella. He got tired of listening to Redmond's long-winded prayer and went inside the Baptist church and broke up the meeting. It's just like, it was really surprising that it was so like just pure comedy to encounter that. So I loved that too in this book.
I think like it's kind of amazing because the beginning of the story starts out, there's like a tiny slice of her childhood, then when she becomes like of age and gets married, and then we're in Eatonville with Joe, and there's like a span of 20 years, And it doesn't really tell you much about like what happens in those 20 years, but it also doesn't feel empty, I think, because you get like a lot of these kind of sketches of what it's like to be in that small town. And I think a lot of that has to be because of the way that she studied places like this, you know? It feels real, and like there is this kind of like town mythology around this mascot of the mule that just kind of like, it goes like, oh, like I've been to a place like that, or I know people who say things like this about the town they live in, and it feels like very real and full, even though it's like a story that could very easily sound like a summary.
Yeah,
you get like a lot of detail in those little areas that still fill it out.
Well, so I guess then we can kind of, so Joe, and she's like happy with Joe when he is courting her, I would say. But then when they actually get married, it's like she realizes he's not really the person that she thought he was. And then he forces her to stay inside all the time, keep her hair covered because she's got very beautiful hair. And then he eventually dies because he is also older than her. And one thing that I thought was really, really interesting is how when Tea Cake comes and starts hanging out with Janie, he takes her to all of these places. She's wearing new clothes, and all the townspeople are like really freaked out for her because they think like he's forcing her to do these things, or he's using her for money, because Joe kept her locked inside all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't know, that whole thing with Janie trying to explain, like, no, I've always wanted to do these things. Joe didn't let me do these things.
Right.
Was really good.
Joe was like incredibly enterprising. He basically founds Eatonville. He shows up with $200, buys most of the land, and then starts the store and the post office. And so like from the very beginning, I think he sees Janie as like a piece of this like successful man puzzle that he needs to have. And so he keeps her pristine, basically, in the shop with her hair covered so that no men can see it and hit on her or whatever. And yeah, it was really sad because there are the times like when they have the funeral for the mule and like she wants to go because it's like a big whole thing for the whole town. And it's kind of funny and like silly and a celebration at the same time. But he won't let her go because it's just not for women like her. But he gets to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All of those things are like a real bummer because that's 20 years of her life. So when Tea Cake shows up and it's just like a complete like 180 from the life she had been living before, she gets that opportunity again. I think there's a beautiful line at the towards the end where Tea Cake says, you know, like, you're not an old woman. You got to live your old years first, and then you saved your young ones for me. And it was just so gorgeous. I loved it.
It is. Yeah. Their whole relationship is so beautiful. Like, even despite myself not liking romance, it feels like this is a romance.
It is.
Because he, you know, they sort of like start out by just like light flirting and it's so cute. And then they move on to playing checkers together. I don't know. And then the way she thinks about him is she realizes like, this is it. Like, this is what I am supposed to feel. And then along with that comes a fear of losing that.
Yeah.
Because this is, you know, her third husband. Obviously, it's going to be scary to know, like, I'm madly in love with this person. What if it goes away?
At the same time, I was very worried for her because he is impulsive. Like, as much as you could tell he also loves her, like, he makes bad decisions. But when they move out and they're staying in a boarding house, and she was convinced by someone at home, must have been Phoebe maybe, to take $200 with her in cash just in case he like gets them to Palm Springs or wherever it was they went to, and then just like takes off with her money or whatever, then at least she would have some money to get home safely.
Yeah.
And she wakes up one morning and her money is gone. And he's out all day, and he comes back home and tells her this, you know, story about like, oh, he'd never seen that much money before. So he spent it all. And he, don't worry, he left $12. He's going to gamble and get it back. And I was just like, absolutely not. No way, girlfriend.
Yeah. And that, I mean, I hated TK because it's like, it's not your money, bro.
Yeah.
But yeah. I also, like, obviously, you know, at this time, whatever a woman had was the man's as well. Yeah. And he yeah. clearly has that thought too, even though he's better than most men that she had been with. And even though he didn't want her to spend all of her money, he was going to wanted mostly, I think he just uses his own to take her out. It's still like he clearly still has that mindset of yeah. Janie is mine. She belongs to me because she's the woman. So her stuff is mine and as well.
When he comes back after having gambled and he does win it back plus some, but he shows up having been stabbed. And I was like, please stop doing these things.
Yeah.
It's just, no, we can't do this.
Yeah, well, and then they go move to dig to like pick beans, and then he's like, beans and dice, and I'm like, no dice, no dice, please.
No. No, you got stabbed once, we don't need to do this again. But the way she thinks about him is just, it is beautiful, and it's very romantic. There's another part I wanted to read, another quote. This is her talking about him. I think it might be even after he returned. I wish I would have written down what page it was on. He could be a bee to a blossom, a pear tree blossom in the spring. He seemed to be crushing scent out of the world with his footsteps, crushing aromatic herbs with every step he took. Spices hung about him. He was a glance from God. Can you...
Yeah.
I mean, she loves him so much and she's never felt that way. And she found that pear blossom feeling that she was looking for from when she was 16, looking up at the tree. And I love how like this kind of theme with the bees and the blossoms, which, you know, obviously is also a clear metaphor for sex and romance specifically too. Mm-hmm. It kind of carries throughout the book. It's not overly done, but it is very pretty, and I just was so excited every time it came back up because it was beautiful.
I think when Hurston is like writing about emotions, it's so, I don't know if I want to say, she uses metaphors and just, I don't know, it's so clear and nice. Like, well, this is not a nice quote, but I'll read it. So this is about Tea Cake has, they're not married yet, and then he goes and he hasn't come back for a couple days. So in the cool of the afternoon, the fiend from hell, specially sent to lovers, arrived at Janie's ear. Doubt. All the fears that circumstance could provide and the heart feel attacked her on every side. This was a new sensation for her, but no less excruciating. If only Tea Cake would make her certain. He did not return that night nor the next, and so she plunged into the abyss and descended to the ninth darkness where light has never been. Like, also, like what you were saying, that could sound very overdramatic, but it works because that's who Janie is. She yeah. feels everything so much.
Yeah, and I think it's just funny, I guess, now, because I can see those warning signs with Tea Cake where I'm like, girl, like, if you were my girlfriend, I would say absolutely, you need to break mm-hmm. up with Tea Cake and run as fast as you yeah. can, because you can't have a guy showing up stabbed at night after leaving you home without your money all day. but then you read something about that, like, the way that he, like, that spices cling to him and God, he is a glance from God, and you're like, holy shit, like, she loves him. Like,
yeah,
I don't know that I've ever felt that way about anybody. So, and I love my husband very much. So it is this, I think it's a really powerful way that doesn't make it seem stupid to be in love with somebody, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was more than just like I said, like your friend who has a crush on some bad guy or whatever. Like, I think because she wanted it so bad and she was finally feeling it was like you couldn't help but like cheer her on at the same time, which I don't always feel, because usually my answer is, if you can break up with him, do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that, and it's also like, that meant when Tea Cake did something wrong, I was so disappointed in him. Like,
yeah,
with that, when he takes her $200 and leaves, like, turns out he's like been having fun all day and didn't take her because he thought she was like too good for that kind of those kind right. of people. And I was just like so offended on her behalf. <It's> like, you don't know that. How do you know that?
Right. Yes. And also, it did kind of remind me, too, of the way that Joe would talk to her about, like, you can't go out mm-hmm. to this thing that the town is yes. doing because that's not for your kind. But she was able to say to him, like, if they're your kind, they're my kind, and I want to be there with you. And he was like, okay. After that, like, they were able to talk through it. It was like, you know, that's pretty good relationship conflict resolution. So, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can probably talk about the ending.
Sure, yeah.
First of all, so they're trying to get away from the hurricane and the lake, because they live on a lake.
They move to the Everglades, basically. I don't know how much you know about Florida. Have you spent any time in Florida, really?
No, I try not to think about Florida.
Don't blame you. Especially right now. I got feelings. But yeah. So Florida, I've been to a little bit. I usually like only went to the Panhandle as a kid, but I drove across it once. And I think being from Michigan, which is a fairly hilly state, we don't have mountains necessarily, but there's hills and there's forests and stuff. Driving across Florida is wild because there are no hills. Like, it is flat as flat can be. So I think the first time I read this book, I didn't think about trying to escape a hurricane because, like, or a flood necessarily, right? Because, like, you think, like, just mm-hmm. get to high ground. But, like, in the Everglades, right. high ground doesn't exist. That's not a thing. So this got really scary.
And when they're walking through the floodwaters, this was, I'm going to laugh, and I'm sorry because this is a very dramatic part, but it's a cow swimming.
Yes.
And there's a dog on top of the cow. I've never seen a cow swim. I guess I knew that they could swim. I mean, they got to have a lot of fat on them, so I suppose they float, but not important. Janie is trying to grab onto the cow's tail, and then the dog is about to attack her. And so Tea Cake is able to kill the dog, but the dog does bite Tea Cake's face. Did you think this is gonna be bad, like, when he gets bitten by the dog, like, immediately?
The one thing that I really, really remembered about this book was the way that it ended. So this time around, I was completely anticipating what happened. I can't say how I felt way back when, I guess. I forgot about the cow, though, so that was, like, a fun surprise in a very terrible part in these characters' lives. But, it's funny also reading this because it has my notes from when I was in high school and, like, the lines that I underlined and stuff, which I've never been, like, particularly good at. But it was funny because I must have been pretty okay at picking out foreshadowing because there were some lines that I had underlined that I was like, oh, like, that is prophetic seeming. So, mm-hmm. I think that was more of, like, a surprise for me this time around than anything else. But how about you? Did you?
Yeah, I read the introduction, so I knew that it was going to end with a trial.
Okay.
But I still somehow, like, forgot or wasn't really thinking about it. But I was immediately like, oh, he's going to have rabies.
Yeah.
Like, the dog has rabies. And the book doesn't explicitly say rabies, but it's obviously rabies, especially because he can't drink any water.
Right.
And that's what rabies does. But I don't know. It was really a sad ending.
Yes.
For their relationship to end like that.
Yeah. I mean, he becomes, I think, you know, I don't know a whole lot about rabies necessarily, but he becomes very paranoid. I don't think he knows the condition he's in necessarily. So he's just kind of going mad because of the sickness he's got. And he becomes convinced that every time Janie leaves the house, she's going to see some man when she's really trying to find out from the doctor if he can get medication for Tea Cake. I don't know. That's really heartbreaking. I think the older I get, the more I think about those times where you can't help the people that you love and how scary that. I think that's, like, maybe my biggest fear now. Whereas, like, before it might have been, like, talking to strangers. Now it's something much more realistic and sad and scary. And so, yeah, that really broke me a little bit. And then, of course, the way that it all transpires is just very upsetting, too.
It also made me think of how back in the day you, like, didn't tell people if they were ill.
Yeah.
Like if they were dying of cancer, if like your mom or grandma were dying of cancer, you like didn't tell them because for fear that that would make them die faster or something like that. And so it made me think of that too, how they're not telling Tea Cake. And it's like of all the people who should know what's happening to him, it's Tea Cake.
It's also interesting because she did with Joe and then he died almost immediately.
Yeah.
Joe was on his deathbed, basically. He'd been getting medicine from some witch doctor type person, or like a, I guess, a natural doctor, spiritual doctor, something, some sort of flim-flammer. And he wouldn't let Janie see him. And then she finally just kind of bursts through the door one day and she's like, "You're dying." And he's like, "Don't tell me that." And then they have a short conversation and, you know, she tells him all of her grievances basically, and then he just dies right there. And so it is a real contrast to what happens with Tea Cake.
The trial is interesting too in that it happens so fast, and I don't mean like the trial itself is fast, I mean the way it's written is like really, really fast, and I think like very interesting to do that. And the introduction talked about it a little bit too, which is maybe why I noticed it more, but we get so much of Janie's like interior life leading up to the trial, and then the trial happens and it's like we don't even hear what she says in her own voice. It's like just a paragraph of that. And I thought that was an interesting choice because of all the things that she went through with Tea Cake, this is obviously the worst. And we don't have to dwell on it. Like what we remember from the book is going to be the good times with Janie and Tea Cake, not going to be this horrible trial.
I also kind of chuckled because basically she gets arrested and then all of the authorities are like, "Well, let's just get a trial done today." And I was like,
"Yeah,
what a time." That's not how it works anymore. But yeah, that was crazy. But yeah, I think that's interesting too. And I think, you know, it's such a sort of sweet gesture in a way, or it tells you about where she is too with her life. Is like, I don't think she's going to spend a lot of time now trying to find anything else to replace Tea Cake, kind of in the ways that she was looking for ways to move out of these bad marriages before. And when she returns home and she's just kind of like, she's thinking about her bedroom there. And it seems like she's trying to banish like the bad things that happened in the week or so before that with Tea Cake dying and then the trial. And then she's basically going to banish those thoughts and then just live with like the memory of the sweet time that they had for like the short 2 years they were together. I don't know. It's a beautiful romance. Like, really, I would call this a romance novel. You know, obviously it's literary fiction, too, but it is really, really beautiful. And it's not necessarily a happy ending, but it kind of is in a weird way too.
Well, yeah, and there's a thing about how,
because it's sweetness. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's kind of a thing with that, you know, how just the same way that Janie forgives Tea Cake for what he does, she ends up forgiving his friends for being very against her during the trial, and it just kind of shows, and then even with her returning to Eatonville, that you know, these are her people and she is going to forgive and, you know, live with them again. So, yeah, it is kind of, it's kind of sweet. It's great. Of course it's great.
Again, like props to my high school English teacher for having us read this. I think a lot of people kind of talk about like how homogenous their high school reading lists were, and looking back, I think I had a lot of options that maybe other people didn't get. So if this isn't something you've read before, I think it should probably be required reading for, you know, people interested in American literature specifically.
Thanks for listening to The Bookstore.
Let's see. What do I say now? If you'd like to support the podcast beyond listening, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/thebookstore or rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.
You can find all the ways to contact us, email, social media, phone line at thebookstorepodcast.com.
Our next book discussion is going to be about How Much of These Hills is Gold by C. Pam Zhang. You can find it at your local bookstore or library and read along with us.
The Bookstore is a production of Awkwardly Social Media, produced by Becca Young and Corinne Keener. Technical and production support is provided by Josh Bourdon and Zach Titus.
And John, if you're out there, thanks for listening.
See you next Tuesday.
Bye.
Bye. Try not to think about Florida.